Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Ring this bell three times well. It's told to clearly say, my treatment's done, this course is run, and I am on my way.
Well said. Woo-hoo.
Okay, here we go.
That's Scott, a 33-year-old software engineer, ringing the bell on his last day at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Texas. He just completed successful treatment for stage 4 bone cancer. I first talked to Scott on an episode of A Slight Change of Plans called The Life-Changing Diagnosis, when he was roughly two-thirds of the way through his treatment. I'm thrilled to share that today, Scott's scans show no evidence of cancer, and he's back at home in California, adapting to life after treatment.
When you're given the command by a very serious and well-trained doctor that here's what you must do, it's obvious that you heed that call. But now nobody's really telling you how you should be spending your time, how to relish and enjoy what you did fight for. And that is a more challenging puzzle.
On today's episode, living on the other side of a life-changing diagnosis. I'm Maya Shunker, and this is A Slight Change of Plans, a show about who we are and who we become in the face of a big change. Before we dive into my recent conversation with Scott, here's a bit of background on him. Scott's a self-proclaimed health nut who has been relentlessly trying to optimize for his future health. We're talking veganism, adding turmeric to his food, intermittent fasting, and sleeping a specific number of hours every night. And so, when Scott's ankles started bothering him in the fall of 2019, and he soon learned that he had stage 4 bone cancer, he was shocked. After all, he'd spent the majority of his adult life trying to avoid this outcome. When Scott and I first spoke, he reflected on how his self-identity was changing in the midst of treatment. He had had his right leg amputated below the knee, a vertebra removed from his spine, and 12 rounds of chemotherapy. For this conversation, I asked Scott if he'd be willing to pick up where we left off. The final part of his treatment would involve 6 more rounds of chemo and 1 additional surgery where doctors would need to operate on his other leg. For that surgery, Scott was given a choice. Option one, a surgery that would require Scott to stay off his leg for 12 months while it healed, but that could ultimately restore his leg to normal function. Or option two, a surgery where he could bear weight on his leg right away, but that would limit his use of that leg in the future. I wanted to know how Scott decided between these two surgeries.
Given my youth and general inclination toward activity, most surgeons were thinking that the former was the better procedure. But as a part of this ensemble of things that were happening to me, I think I had to think pretty hard about whether I wanted to dig in for another 12 months or more, or just move on with my life a little bit, accepting that I would have limitations for the rest of my life. And so I talked to a lot of people about it, and I think my wife and I were in agreement that I don't always have to do the hardest thing and opt for the slog, that I could say, you know what, I need a break. I want this to be over sooner rather than later. And even if this doesn't allow me to be a Paralympian, I'm going to be able to get around. And it felt like when you're talking about this disease, it's quite possible that things come back in 12 months. And if I wanted to enjoy the next 12 months, and it does feel kind of dark, but if you want to think about, well, time is short. Time may be short. It's short for all of us, but it may be particularly short for me. Do I want to spend the next 12 months of my life on crutches, crushing on a prosthetic, when there might not be that much more than that?
Yeah, I mean, your decision to go with the surgery that was easier in the shorter term, potentially more complicated in the longer term, it strikes me as such a foreign decision for Scott. Like, given everything I know about you, you are through and through like a suffer now, live later kind of guy, you know? It does strike me, I mean, sometimes isolated decisions that we make in life can represent more global shifts in perspective. And I do wonder if this felt new to you in some way or represents something slightly bigger.
Yeah, no, it's a good observation. I think I'm definitely a delayment of gratification kind of guy. Like, I am an embodiment of the marshmallow test in that I haven't...
Yeah. Even when the researchers came back and gave you the two marshmallows to enjoy, you were like, nope, I don't even want those.
That's right. That's right. I think it did signal a little bit of self-compassion, just a sense, an acknowledgement of, wow, this has been a really hard year. I'd like to get off the ride now. I guess tempted by an easier option, I feel skeptical of it because it's a shortcut. It must be a half measure. But in this case, I just felt, you know, maybe I deserve the shortcut.
Mm. You know, I'm mindful of the fact that you were going through this entire experience against the backdrop of a global pandemic. And I'm curious to know what it was like to navigate your treatment with this added layer of complexity.
Yeah. There was something that was actually kind of fortuitous about it, because as I was kind of receding from my normal life, everybody else was sort of doing the same. And I didn't have to feel so self-conscious because people weren't out in the world really. Like, nobody could see what was below the sort of the carnage below screen, which was kind of great. And so February, March of 2021, vaccines started circulating. And I think there was the sense that the world was going to open up and people were going to get back to real life and start congregating. And while this was exciting to get my own inoculation, I also felt a little anxiety that, you know, the gig is up. Like, now I'm going to be expected to, you know, present myself and come out of the closet as, you know, somebody who is now disabled in a way. And I think I certainly had mixed emotions about it. In some ways, the pandemic and everybody's reclusiveness was suiting my lifestyle, and I wasn't quite finished, and I felt like I was going to get left behind when everybody just suddenly marches into the streets, and I'm sort of I wasn't quite ready for that.
Yeah. On the last day of your treatment, you participated in a ritual that MD Anderson has for patients where you read an inscription on the wall, you ring a bell. It's this incredibly joyous experience. And you're surrounded by your caretakers. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it felt triumphant in a way. I got to celebrate a little bit in the, you know, such as it is in the cancer ward. It was a real pleasure to know that I wouldn't have to come through those doors again, at least for a while, and subject myself to that form of torture. You know, it's so weird that you're intensely grateful for the care and kindness, and yet at the same time you never want to see those people again because of what they represent and what they leave you with. So yeah, it's funny to, you know, to say goodbye to these people that I've been seeing almost daily for months and say, like, you know, hope see you never and feel good about that.
And then correct me if I'm wrong, but is it a few days after the bell ringing that you get the final body scan?
Yeah, so in the first scan after treatment, everything looked good. I was clear of any overt signs of disease or tumor, the one exception being a small little nodule that they saw in the lung, which they couldn't say much about except that there was something, and all we could do was kind of acknowledge it and wait, because it was too small to really interpret visually and not advisable to interrogate it any further. It was just, we'll wait and see. And I mean, I was assured that it was likely nothing, but that's kind of what I heard a year before, you know, when my ankle hurt, and it's probably just a sprain or probably just tendinosis or something. So obviously I'm concerned, but had to just sit with that feeling of concern and understand that there's nothing to do. The evidence that it's anything will only emerge in time if it does. And that is the hallmark of cancer, is that it grows, and so we have to wait to see if it grows. And I think that's a hard thing to do, to just sort of shut it out of your mind, but I guess maybe, yeah, I guess I, at that point I had a lot of practice disengaging from all the what-if thinking, because you could really just spiral.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such an important characteristic of illness and disease that we often have to redefine what it means to actually cross the finish line, both physically and psychologically, right? I mean, essentially, yeah, it's about learning to live with this permanent feeling of unease, to come to terms with that. And I hear you saying, you know, you had a lot of practice, but I know listeners who are going through similar situations want to know, like, Scott, what is your secret? How do you manage the waiting game, right? Like, how do you manage the anxiety that accompanies this kind of uncertainty?
That's so interesting. Turning it over in your mind, like, unlike a rock tumbler, it's not necessarily going to smooth out the gemstone. It's just going to, you know, make it spikier and scarier, because you simulate all the outcomes that are frankly terrifying, whereas actually kind of just turning away from it with sanity, you know, with a sane plan. It's not as though I'm going to ignore it, but we know that the only thing to do is wait and see and kind of follow up when the time comes. I mean, I think this whole ordeal, obviously, when trying to kind of muscle through a treatment plan like this, which feels interminable, your whole psyche is organized around getting through it, getting to the other side. There's a finish line. And that's what ringing the bell felt like. And now on the other side of that, you're kind of dumped into this ocean of after time that feels like it's, well, A, it's of uncertain length, but B, there is no finish line now. And it's a little bit like, you know, graduating from school or getting your degree, and then you enter adult life, and there's no definitive hurdles or milestones. You kind of just have to make those up for yourself. And likewise, you know, I'm fighting for survival, fighting to complete this treatment to give me a chance at living a full life. And now that I'm in that, the question is, okay, well, wait, what is a full life? Like, it was clear that a full life is something you want, and so I'm very willing to fight for that. But now I have to sort of realize that life, and you know, what does make for a meaningful, full, happy life? If you no longer have this very concrete goal to save your life, that is a more challenging puzzle. It's easier when you have marching orders. And I think that's why there's a psychological kind of purity to war or something, where it's just so clear what you have to do, whereas it's this kind of malaise of privilege, like a privilege of time and a concern that you might be squandering it.
We'll be right back with a slight change of plans. Have you ever put a little too much trust in those grocery bag handles and ended up with your favorite snacks spilled all over the sidewalk? Well, probiotics can't help with all of your gut decisions, but if your gut needs a little support, Ritual has your back. They made a 3-in-1 supplement called Symbiotic Plus with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome. Stress, travel, food choices, and plenty of other factors can throw off your gut microbiome. That's where Ritual comes in. They created a 3-in-1 supplement to support the relief of frustrating digestive issues. I take Symbiotic Plus every morning, and I always appreciate that it's a single minty capsule. Its delayed release is designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract. And with no refrigeration required, Ritual makes it easier to keep this part of my daily routine even when I'm traveling. There's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/slight. Start Ritual and add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/slight for 25% off.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
the most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You threw everything you had physically and emotionally into fighting for your life. And now you are living that life. Mm-hmm. And it's up to you now to find clarity around what you want that life to look like. And it feels like an overwhelming and pressure-filled process that maybe a person ought not to face in their lives, because all of a sudden the stakes feel so high, and maybe that's unnatural. Like I almost don't, in this moment, I'm struggling to know whether it's like a good thing for you to feel like you have to fully reorganize your life and your priorities and all that comes along with it. It's nice to feel enlightened, but I guess there's something lovely about also reclaiming a sense of normalcy and not feeling like there has to be profound shifts, you know, not feeling like you can't sweat the small stuff anymore and you can't begrudge the customer service agent who's giving you a hard time because, oh my God, that stuff doesn't matter. And so does it feel like a burden actually to have to re-enter life with like a new purpose and a new philosophical mindset?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think certainly I do crave a degree of normalcy, and it's like, it feels like a triumph and a delight to go to bed and realize I didn't take a single medication today. Like I didn't have to swallow a single pill today, or there was no point during the day in which I needed to lie down. I just sort of conducted a normal adult life. And I think that feels great. But I also do notice like there's a tinge of sadness at just resuming as if nothing happened, or like noticing that I'm falling into patterns that I thought this experience had helped me outgrow. One of the things that I think I've gained from this experience is a little bit more flexibility in terms of my environment, what I eat. I just feel like less fussy about my physical circumstances, whether it's comfort or food or whatever. Not to say I don't still seek those things out, but so when I find myself being picky or fastidious about something, I notice like I can chastise myself thinking, you know, have you learned nothing? Like, what do you, you know, this is such a pre-cancer, pre-illness thought.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think what I'm hearing and what I'm reflecting on in this moment is that there is a tension, right? I think it's very tempting for us to come out the other side from a very challenging, difficult episode and feel, okay, I am enlightened. I have a new perspective. Let this all not be for naught. You know, please let me have learned things. But then there's this pull from the other side, which is there's some value in feeling some of the more familiar everyday feelings that I once felt, because it is signaling to my brain that the old constellation of things that I used to care about, that I used to get riled up about, whatever it is, still exist. And it's just like not knowing what the right balance is, I guess. I don't know if you felt that way. Like you chastise yourself, and yet at the same time, there's something very familiar and comforting, potentially, about worrying about what you eat.
Yeah.
Like how awesome is it that I have the luxury of worrying about what I'm eating right now? That's awesome. that my brain has even the bandwidth to think about that. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does that resonate with you?
It's well said. I mean, it feels like getting my old self back in a way. But then I think, oh, well, mate, was my old self that great? My old self was a person who got cancer. So what, were my decisions all wrong? Or was it, you know, some karmic retribution for something? So it's like there's some aversion I have to my old self, because my old self was something that got me in the place of getting bone cancer, which I know feels like somewhat perverted. When I was a senior in high school and got into Harvard, it was like validated everything I had done up to that point, which is absurd, but that's a mindset. And by the same token, getting diagnosed with cancer calls into question anything that's happened before. Was I doing something wrong? Whether it's physically, nutritionally, spiritually, whatever. And so I do feel like some distance from my old self, because that old self kind of faced judgment. This all feels like weirdly spiritual and religious, and I don't mean it. I'm implying no theology here. I'm just noticing that my brain likes narratives. But if you think that, well, do the ends justify the means in some way, or if I'm now more mature, or have my personality's been smoothed out by this whole experience, it suggests what I needed was a good ass kicking in some way. And I certainly got that.
I'm listening, and I guess I'm lightly stunned by the agency you feel old Scott played in, quote, getting cancer. Like, why is old Scott carrying any moral responsibility for a physical outcome that old Scott didn't? I mean, how does that possibly work out logically?
I don't think it's rational, but it feels like,
you feel it, right?
Yeah. It feels like the other side of the coin of agency, to use your word, which is that if I feel like I can move the needle positively, then it seems like maybe I somehow move the needle negatively. Right? If it's within your power to.
But some things aren't within your power. You might not.
Totally.
You might biologically just have had like no defense against this cancer. There's
totally.
No counterfactual world in which you defeat the cancer through any sort of intervention. You accept that as being at least one reality, right?
Oh, I completely accept that. Even hearing you say it is therapeutic.
And the reason I'm so interested in this, Scott, is because that self-blame is our way, I think, of subconsciously exerting control. It's like we need to feel like our past selves had control and our current day selves had control. And it is an interesting quirk of human nature to play this game with ourselves, you know?
Mm.
And I do wonder whether when you come out the other side of treatment successfully, it can seduce you back into that older mindset of thinking we are, in fact, in control of our outcomes. Because you saw some version of an input-output model play out in your favor, right?
Yeah. I love everything you just said. I think it definitely is part of this illusion of control, which is somehow comforting. Definitely in the throes of treatment, I am being kind of passed around from clinic to clinic, doctor to doctor, and I don't feel like I have much agency. And that's a little freeing. I guess now as I regain my own agency and contemplate how I want to direct that agency, I do feel more prone to that narrative of control. But right, so either it feels like you should own the good and the bad. And if you're entitling yourself to own the good, then you should take responsibility for the bad. However, the truth is probably more that you shouldn't take much ownership of anything, the bad or the good. But it feels better Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to dig in a little bit on this topic of identity, because one of the most memorable parts of our first conversation is when we talked about your changing relationship with your identity. You said that the things that you felt had defined you, like your physical fitness, were perhaps more, quote, negotiable mm-hmm. than you thought. And that you said something so evocative, like, you know, even though I can't do handstand, I'm still me. And I want to know, what's your current understanding of what makes you you? What are those defining traits?
Yeah, what makes me me? I'm happy to report that I can do a nice handstand again. Is that the opposite of the point?
That's awesome, though.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I've become a little less me, which might be for the better.
Say more about that.
We had this weird experience where we went up to the Russian River, a group of friends, and we stayed in a house. And it was supposed to be this sort of quiet getaway. And it turned out that in the open meadow across the street, that weekend was scheduled a rodeo. The rodeo was in town, and like the front yard was essentially a parking lot for this rodeo. And I think there were sort of two camps in responding to this. Half of the folks were annoyed that it was disrupting their intended vibe. And I think 2 years ago, I certainly would have been in that camp, just outraged and indignant and feeling sort of this urban smugness at the rodeo. But for some reason, I found myself, I was viewing it like as if I was a sociologist. Like I was curious about, I guess, the treatment of animals notwithstanding, I was interested in the cultural novelty of it and kind of wanted to explore it and understand it more rather than just feeling a need to flee. And I do think that's a shift in my personality that I'm grateful for. I think your life is just easier when you're less pissed off by stuff.
Mm. It's interesting. I mean, you said you're less pissed off, right? In the face of things you would have coded as disturbances before, right? But it seems like there's more there. It's not simply being less pissed off. It seems like there's some exploratory side of your personality that's...
Well... Your show is called Slight Change of Plans. You know, sometimes you get curveballs, and I was just sort of curious about what was in store. And it's like, yeah, who's to say that my plans would have gone out without a hitch anyway, right? I've had this experience in the past where things got off track despite my best intentions. And so maybe it matters less that things are executing according to plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's so fascinating what you've just said, because you could easily imagine, I mean, I think the common narrative would be after a wildly unexpected stage 4 cancer diagnosis, we cower in the face of slight changes of plan, right? We're fearful of unexpected, unexplored terrain, because you know what? Last time we went there, we didn't like it. But what you're saying makes me think from a totally different perspective, which is you're coming at this from having so carefully crafted your plans. And like you said, despite your best efforts, things went off the rails. And so maybe we should be embracing some of the curveballs more generally.
Yeah. And guess what? I think that it saved me a few hours of consternation, because like, so I was better off in my subjective experience. So it's like, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. I remember, Scott, when we talked, you had said that, and this is while you were in the middle of treatment, you were resisting any big changes to the way that you lived your life. And I pulled a clip from that conversation. So let's take a listen.
What has it been like to confront death in this way?
how have I confronted death?
Or have you confronted it? I mean, maybe you haven't, which is also completely fine, you know?
In order to undergo this hideous array of treatment, I have to operate on the assumption that I'm going to come out on the other side and live a long life. Because otherwise, what's the point? Maybe you should change your behavior in some way or change the lens with which you look at the world. But you also should, if you're to survive, probably act as if you're going to survive. You know, fake it until you make it.
So now that you're no longer undergoing treatments and you don't need to carry this mindset in order to power through, I'm wondering if you have made any changes to the way you live your life.
Mm. We sound so young. Yeah, it's interesting. I think at this point, I think I've internalized the sense that life might be for me more compressed than I thought it would be. And that it does create a little bit of pressure to use time wisely. And I think, if I'm being honest, sometimes I find myself a little more like impatient. I do feel encumbered with the responsibility to like use time fruitfully. And by fruitful, I mean in a way that is satisfying and enjoyable and kind and has value to me and others. When you have decades ahead of you, as most people assume, you could sort of kick the can down the road and say, well, there'll be time for that later, or I'll figure it out in time. And now I'm thinking, well, I should figure this out now. I definitely think it changes the calculus. This whole having a life-threatening diagnosis definitely changes the calculus of whether you're investing in the very long term. It's like you could say, well, you know, when I'm older, when I feel economically secure, then I'll invest in having a gratifying life. But now it feels like if there's ever a time to do it, it's now.
Hmm. In our last conversation, you mentioned something that surprised you, which was that the emotional thermostat had prevailed. You were pleasantly surprised to find that despite your worst fear happening, the good moments felt just as good. You know, you had more lows, and I think you said certainly it's a pain in the ass, don't get me wrong, but you had achieved some kind of happiness equilibrium, and I'm just curious to know if this is still the case.
Yeah, it feels like there's enough in life to either rue or have regret for or take joy in and find gratitude for, that you can, there's just enough going on that you can kind of pick and choose what to highlight or not. And it's really less about the sum total of all the good stuff and the bad stuff. It's more about just what you shine your mental spotlight on. And so in the course of all this, obviously it was debilitating and not fun, but there were also, you know, a lot of unexpected silver linings. And yeah, it's funny that one's mind can drift towards gratitude in the face of tragedy. And I've been pleasantly surprised that, like, it's pretty easy for me to focus on the nice things. It takes reinforcement, but it's definitely there.
Hey, thanks for listening. Join me next week when I talk to author Michael Pollan about the power psychedelics have to change our minds and what he's learned from his own psychedelic trips.
One of the things psychedelics does is it takes all that ironic crust we cover the world with, and it scrapes it off really effectively. And suddenly things appear with the profundity and beauty of first sight. I mean, awe at the ordinary is a really, you know, a piece of music, a flower. I mean, and that's a wonderful aspect of psychedelic experience.
A Slight Change of Plans is created, written, and executive produced by me, Maya Shunker. The Slight Change family includes Tyler Green, our senior producer, Jen Guerra, our senior editor, Ben Tolliday, our sound engineer, Emily Rostek, our producer, and Mia LaBelle, our executive producer. Luis Guerra wrote our theme song, and Ginger Smith helped arrange the vocals. A Slight Change of Plans is a production of Pushkin Industries, so big thanks to everyone there, including Malcolm Gladwell, Jacob Weisberg, Lital Malad, and Heather Fain. And of course, a very special thanks to Jimmy Lee. You can follow A Slight Change of Plans on Instagram at Dr. Maya Shunker. See you next week. I'd love to hear about your return flight home. Like, do you remember the kinds of thoughts that were going through your head? Or like what it felt like to be leaving?
Well, I was thrilled to be making the journey and generally find air travel hellish. But at that point, I was thinking, what can United do to me that MD Anderson hasn't already done?
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.